Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Welcome to Masonic Central, the podcast program for Freemasons by Freemasons. This publication is a twice-monthly broadcast that is recorded live with a panel of selected Masons from the Internet community. Often, its focus will be on the Masonic world at large and will strive to interview and bring you topical information on the world of Freemasonry in the simple medium of an Internet podcast. This new on-air program for Freemasonry is recorded and published by TalkShoe.com, which is the pinnacle of economic publishing technology to bring this production to your computer. Look for future publications on iTunes, on TalkShoe, or at our website, MasonicCentral.com. As a disclaimer, all content is representative of the contributors and does not represent the opinions of any regular or irregular Masonic bodies or Grand Masonic Lodge. I want to introduce myself. My name is Greg Stewart. Today's date is June 1st, 2008, and this is our first publication of Masonic Central. Again, my name is Greg Stewart. Many may know me by the moniker of Masonic Traveler. I publish two websites, one of them being FreemasonInformation.com and a blog at MasonicTraveler.blogspot.com. And this is my co-host, Dean Kennedy. Dean?
Hi, my name is Dean Kennedy, and I hail from the Great White North, Nova Scotia, Canada. And I publish one blog, the free-mason at blogspot.com, and basically that blog focuses on eBay products and whatever else comes to my mind that are all Masonic in content. Go ahead, Greg.
Very good. Today's topic in today's show is about modern Freemasonry and with a specific emphasis on Prince Hall Freemasonry. Our special guest tonight is Brother Fred Milliken, who hails out of the Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Texas. Fred, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Spent most of my Masonic life in Massachusetts in mainstream Masonry. Past master of two lodges there. Moved to Texas about 4 years ago, associated with the Grand Lodge of Texas, and then moved on to Prince Hall Grand Lodge.
Very nice.
I also publish a blog called The Beehive, Beehive 135 at blogspot.com.
I'm glad you got that out, that you did a much better job than me. I can tell where the talent is here tonight, up north.
Hey, I don't know where it's at either. We're just figuring this out, everybody. As we go, again, the topic really tonight's about modern Freemasonry and what that means. You know, all of us have this idea of what Freemasonry means to each of us individually as we approach it. And part of this podcast and the idea behind it is to get a feel and an idea of what other people think that is. I'll just chime in here for a moment and just say modern Freemasonry today, to me, has a definite flavor of more of a social atmosphere of a fraternity. Oftentimes I get asked the question, is if Freemasonry is like a college fraternity, and at times I find myself falling back on the answer that it seems to me in some ways that it is. Though there's certain aspects of it that certainly lend itself to otherwise. I'm curious, what do you two think? Dean, Fred, what do you think modern Freemasonry is?
Go ahead, Fred.
Well, I say that what you've reiterated is true. I also would like to add that in many cases, modern Freemasonry has turned Masonry into a service club, and the emphasis is on institutionalized charity to the extent that much of the budget of Freemasonry is devoted to charity for the entire community to the detriment of educating its members.
When you say detriment, how do you see it as a detriment? I know I have my ideas and what that might represent, but how do you see that as a detriment?
Well, Grand Lodge could be much, much of a better, much more, how do you say that? A better helper to its individual chartered lodges by coming across with programs that only it can organize so well drawing resources from the entire state of its jurisdiction and the expertise of all the members in that to create educational programs, Masonic conferences, it could do a lot for the individual Mason. But instead, they're spending their money all on institutionalized charity instead of spending the money on that.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious. Do you think that this is do you think this has always been the case, or do you think that it's a change perhaps in the last, say, 40, 50 years? Do you think that they had done it differently in a different age?
Yes, most definitely I do, because I've been a Mason for 20 years, and I've seen it grow and grow. And I think it's the influence of the shrine on Freemasonry, pressure from the shrine for continuing membership, and some members of the shrine trying to convince Masonry that the shrine model works, and that's what gets people into membership.
Interesting. Now, you know, you mentioned the shrine, and I'm curious in this, and I'm sorry, Dean, I'm like totally skipping you. What do you think?
I will pipe in when I have a minute. I did hear the other day, though, when someone was asked, when we were in Lodge and we were talking about education in Lodge and the good things that Masonry brings, and we talked about charity, and someone piped up and used the shrine as an example and said, yeah, we do charity, like, the Shriners are a great example of the charity we run. And I thought to myself, I said, well, why do we have to say the shrine? Why can't we say, the Brethren or the Blue Lodge? Why aren't they setting the example? Why do we have to make a separate group just to do charity work? And you know, it's not like that in other grand jurisdictions outside of North America. It's a specific North American thing, and that does cause me some concern. Although I will say that, you know, for those guys that are in the shrine, I'm not poking anything at the shrine, but I think that there is some dilution there of what the Blue Lodge could do, and people are having to go to this side organization to provide that other value, and I think it detracts from Blue Lodge
to do some of that service. Sure, I even just to say, you know, for the emphasis of the shrine, the work that they do is magnificent. You know, their reputation and the degree of their work is bar none. I mean, they are the pinnacle of what public giving should be, especially in the breadth of their hospitals and the services that they provide. But I think in some ways, Dean, that you're touching on something there where the split between the three has three different organizations, well, four different organizations has created this sort of institutional idea that it's not the Blue Lodge or the Scottish Rite of the York that does charity, that it is the shrine aspect of Freemasonry. And I think that has created a degree of stigma to it. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. You know, I'm curious, since we have Brother Fred on here, as Prince Hall Shrine goes, is their institution similar in what you've seen? Because I know you have a background from Massachusetts, as you said, that you were in regular Freemasonry there. And regular, I mean by American regular Freemasonry, prior to your joining the Prince Hall in Texas. The Prince Hall in Texas, though, shrine, are they similar to how the regular version is, or do they operate in a different modus operandi?
I wish I could tell you. I'm not a member, but from all indications of my conversations with the Brethren in Prince Hall, they operate pretty much the same way. They don't have the large amount of members and the financial resources that mainstream Masonry has in its shrine.
Go ahead. Dan. We're just a little hiccup there. Are you there?
Yeah.
Fred? Okay.
Did you get that?
I did. How do you think then the Blue Lodge necessarily functions with it? Is there the same? Is there the same movement between Blue Lodge membership into the shrine? Do you see young men come in and then graduate up through the ranks?
I see nobody that has come in through Blue Lodge solely to go to shrine. I don't see that in Prince Hall at all. Well, I have seen that in mainstream masonry, where new brethren have come in and have never been seen again in Blue Lodge. I don't see that in Prince Hall.
Mm-hmm. I remember back. Oh, sorry, Dean. Go ahead.
I was going to say, just as an example, my mother lodge that I have recently demitted from, but only because of my distance from them and a few other factors, but I do still respect everyone there. But two potentates in a row have come out of my lodge, and I will say that some of the members going through that lodge were headed right for the shrine, and within a year of becoming Masons, became members of the shrine. And I struggled with that. There's good and bad, and or two sides to that issue, I guess you could say.
Sure,
I struggle.
Sure.
I try to. My one piece of advice for guys coming into the lodge is to wait at least a year in the Blue Lodge before you go and look at some of the other bodies, and instead of rushing through. And what I find is people rush through, and then you don't see them in Blue Lodge again. And then they spend a couple of years in other organizations, and then you don't see them there after as well.
Right. And, you know, and I wonder if there's a degree of drop-off like that. You know, what's funny is that in the conversation starting and going in this direction, I remember, Fred, in a magazine that you used to write for Brother Defoe in his Masonic magazine. I remember towards the end of the series, there was actually an article about this very topic that talked about the progressive wave of traffic that were coming in to the Blue Lodges simply to get up into the shrine. I remember that from it. I was actually just looking through some of the leaflets that I have to see if I could find the story. But, you know, I wonder if how prevalent that still is today. I wonder if the emphasis was still there to get men in just simply to get into the shrine. I mean, I suppose as any organization goes, you know, as they exist as a separate body, certainly there would be a concern for numbers and membership. And with their shift from having the prerequisite of belonging to the Scottish Rite or the York Rite, certainly was a means to try to make it easier. I don't know. I don't want that to necessarily stand out and represent what modern Freemasonry is. I think that's certainly a big factor to it, though. And definitely a contributor to it.
We are pulling a little bit away from our topic of the night, so we should perhaps
absolutely
back in.
Absolutely. You know, and perhaps then this next question I'm going to direct directly to you, Fred. Tell us about Prince Hall Freemasonry. What is Prince Hall? Or what is Prince Hall Masonry? We all know, or most of us should know, who Prince Hall is, but tell us a little bit about Prince Hall Freemasonry.
Fred?
Uh-oh. Did we lose Fred?
We might have lost Fred. It's not looking like we lost him, but I guess we'll have to assume we lost Fred for a few seconds there. Greg, what's your understanding of where Prince Hall Freemasonry came from? You and I are both ancient Freemason strand of Masonry. So we're kind of talking as from the sidelines, but perhaps you could start by explaining what you feel Prince Hall Masonry is, and then when we have Fred back, or if one of our other guests who's online with us, who's also a Prince Hall Masonry, if he can find a way to get on to talk, maybe we could ask him as well. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Sure. Well, just in my understanding, and just some of the things that I've dug into and trying to learn the history of it overall, Prince Hall Freemasonry is traditionally a second branch of American Freemasonry in the United States. It seems to be, I don't want to say a phenomenon, but it seems to be a creation that exists solely in America and has been transplanted to other countries via the military or other service organizations where members of it have taken it elsewhere, where I've heard that it's been having a tremendous growth. I even just recently of, you know, having lodges that are meeting in Iraq, which is remarkable. Prince Hall, from my understanding, starts back from a point in time back into the late 1700s, pre-revolution in the United States, as Prince Hall was a freed slave and at a point in time was made a Mason in an Irish lodge, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of emails back to correct us on it. But that he was made a Mason in an English lodge, essentially, Irish-English lodge, and made
in 1784, by the way.
There we go. There we go. Thank you, Wikipedia. And so it was with his creation, really, it started a second branch of American Freemasonry, which has grown ever since. They've been tremendous in many of the African-American communities in the United States and boast quite a membership. You know, it's an organization that is very large. I don't have numbers offhand, but I was hoping
so,
I could get that from Fred. But
as a sideline view of things, and Fred is, in fact, off now, so we'll have to work on that. The founder was from Barbados, and where we go from there is that the Grand Lodge of England basically at some point severed relationships with that lodge, and it formed its own Grand Lodge, and from there at this point we've in the last 10-15 years we've started to reconnect with them. However. Stop me if I'm wrong here on any of these points. However, there is a little bit of controversy in some Grand Lodge jurisdictions with regards to whether or not we should accept these brethren as brethren. Currently, in my Grand jurisdiction, I do not distinguish the difference. However, there are other members that listen to this podcast where that will differ. And there are many sides to this issue, I suppose. However, I can only see two real issues coming out of this from... Fred, are you on now?
Can you hear me?
There we go. Hello? Fred, just in time. Hey, Fred, can you hear us?
I'm almost... Yes. I'm becoming religious again, Fred. Fred, could you bring us back up to speed on a quick summary of Prince Hall? Greg and I have been trying to struggle a little bit with trying to find Prince Hall and where we are and getting it to today, where it stands today.
Well, it's traditional Black Freemasonry. It was formed in Boston, Massachusetts. But I think what most people are interested in is how does it differ from mainstream Masonry? And,
very good.
I would say that Prince Hall has a definite Christian flavor to it, which is something that many mainstream Freemasons would not agree with.
When you say a Christian flavor, and thanks for joining us back, Fred. I know we Dean and I were struggling on our Prince Hall knowledge with our special guest. Helping us out, trying to pull our data together. When you say though that they have a definite Christian flavor, in what respects? I know in regular Freemasonry, as many of the listeners may know, that it's been sanitized to agree that there is less direct specific relationship to the divine and just more of a generalization to it. And so, go ahead, please.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so how would you define a Christian flavor in the Prince Hall Lodge? Do you is it invocation of in prayer, or how do you see that?
It's invocation to Jesus. I know when I go to my Grand Lodge session, that the Grand Master stands up there and starts every Grand Lodge with a thanks to Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. But it's not only that. Prince Hall Freemasons not only know their Freemasonry, but they know how that Freemasonry interacts with the Bible, where all the parts of the ritual are in the Bible, and it's cross-referenced. And it's even more interesting information. I mean, if you look into the history of how Prince Hall developed, you have to realize that the black man, even a free man back in the early 1800s, late 1700s, was not able to gather in the usual venues that most of us white people were. I mean, he couldn't go down to the Grange to the square dance, or he couldn't go many different places, to the theater or other public places. The only really place that blacks could gather without being harassed was their church. And so, actually, Prince Hall Freemasonry has grown hand in hand with the black church.
Very interesting.
Also,
One more point
that's very, very important. Black Freemasons and black culture, a lot of times, not look upon the separation of church and state as something that they agree with. As a matter of fact, you find many politicians that come into the church to preach in the church and talk politics in the church, and you find many church members that belong to the lodge and many lodge members that speak in church. It's all interconnected. Politics, religion, and Freemasonry is one big circle. There is no separation of church and state, and because that was the place where black men could gather without being harassed, most every Prince Hall Mason is a Christian, and therefore they don't see what we see. I mean, they're looking through a different set of eyes.
Different set of lenses.
Yes.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Just a couple of things I just wanted to throw in so that I can correct Dean's and my lack of specific knowledge about it when we were relying so heavily on you, Fred. Just with some of our visiting or viewing guests, that it wasn't in fact an Irish lodge, but it's questionable or dubious whether or not he was a slave. The year it looks like was 1784, and that legend has it that Prince Hall originally came from Barbados, but it was a little bit murky as to the specifics of his true origin from where he came from. And then it looks like here that there's another note that when the Grand Lodge of England united and became the UGLE, the United Grand Lodge of England, they did not carry the African lodges over to the new roles. So essentially they fell off of the roles with recognition. And so that there's been a continuous question as to their recognition here in the United States, which is actually something that we can talk about in just a couple of moments, as to the complete recognition and all. But again, I don't want to interrupt you. Actually, and part of the question that I have with this is it's interesting that the lack necessarily of the separation in there and the idea of church and state. How do you see that as being different? Does it make a man a different Mason having that degree of I don't want to say religiosity, but that degree of focus?
I don't think it makes him really, really different. It just makes his focus somewhat different. Other than that, his dedication to Freemasonry, I can see as the same.
That's great. I wonder if institutionally, if it gives them something socially to recognize and hold on to with, say, church, for instance. You know, they can go to Sunday church service and then the lodge and the messages are the same in a sense that that there's more of a connectivity there with it. Whereas in regular Freemasonry, just to add that in, that there tends to be more of a homogenization necessarily of religious doctrine, whereas it's more about the idea of faith rather than a specific faith.
And could that
yeah,
be, Fred? Is the Christianization of Masonry is that specific to Texan Prince Hall Masonry, or is it across all North America?
It's across all of North America, as far as I know. I'm not claiming that I have excellent knowledge, but as far as I know, it's pretty much that way. As a matter of fact, I attended recently, back a couple of months ago, a district church service for all the lodges in the district, along with their Eastern Star and Herons of Jericho counterparts. And the Grand Master was there, and district deputies were there, and we all did a church service together in church.
I just find that interesting because on the Blue Lodge side, we often debate about the Christianization of Blue Lodge, and some of us try to keep it non-secular, because we have all faiths coming together. So there's a big distinction there then between the two ideas of Prince Hall being somewhat secular versus the Blue Lodge, where we try to keep it non-secular and open to all religions. But I guess saying that, do they allow other people, other religions to come in? Do they put a Quran on the altar if another faith comes in the door? Can you comment on that?
Yes, I can. They do allow other religions. They will put another holy book on the altar. They just don't get a lot of it. That's all. I mean, in my lodge that I go to is 100, and mostly a very devout Christian. But if one were to come in, a Muslim or Jewish applicant, that the books would be there, and
they still have all religions. That's great. So they still have that openness in the sense that it is open to men of all faiths and
all religions.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I lost everybody. Okay. Yep.
All religions and all races.
Yeah, they let you in, Fred?
Yeah, they let me in. Yeah.
So that's great. Well, I mean, that definitely puts Prince Hall into a perspective for us. Obviously, I'm curious what the degree of its education, ritual, and fraternity are like. Having have you here, Fred, you got the best of both worlds, so you can see both. But from the Prince Hall perspective, what's the education like? I know that what the ritual is like. In a sense, I've met some Prince Hall brothers, but I'm curious, from the education end of it, how in depth do lodges go in educating new brothers?
Very, very deeply, and I would say that I look at Prince Hall Freemasons as being very well educated. And let me tell you what happens here when you come in to do your degree. The very next meeting, all the candidates come back into lodge. And they are subjected to an hour or more questioning. And then next meeting, and we meet twice a month, they come back and they're subjected to another hour or more of questioning. And there's such time as a lodge feels that they are ready to go to the next degree. The average time in my lodge for a person to go through the degree is 6 months. But it depends on how fast they can assimilate all the knowledge. And they're not only required to know the catechism and to memorize the obligation, but they ask also to know all the material that is presented in all the lectures, how it pertains to the Bible and Bible passages. And do you know the Bible readings that are read in each degree? Those must be memorized. It's quite a bit more than I find in mainstream Masonry.
That's very interesting. I did. I'm actually reading what one of our guests are talking about in here, and they are saying that there are aspects of it that are definitely more esoteric, especially in their jurisdiction, which is in Georgia, but that doesn't necessarily reflect just a Christian doctrine. But I'm wondering if that might be something more that's lodge to lodge necessarily, that's really incumbent on the makeup of the membership of that lodge. If you have a diverse mix, say, of Christian, Muslim, and Jew, that there is a little bit more of the flavor of esoteric as it takes in those different traditions. You know, just in regular Freemasonry, as we see lodges that are made up, you know, of all policemen or of all rail operators and the like, you know, those lodges would take on more of a tone for whatever the group makeup is.
I would suspect that would be the case, but I don't suspect that the intensity, the real intensity of the work involved in becoming a Mason and the knowledge, the large amount of knowledge that a new candidate is required to assimilate would be any different in a lodge with a different makeup.
Mm-hmm. Does it, and without getting into any specifics, I don't want to put anybody's obligations in question, but does the education go beyond the depth of the catechism and the text that's involved with it, and bringing in other texts and other ideas, you know, such as Pike or Hall or Wilmshurst or and any of the others, or does it center strictly around the pages of the catechism of the rituals that they've gone through and the Bible or whatever sacred text they connect to? Do they ever go much beyond that in the sense of, you know, here's some information on Pythagoras, here's this? And I ask really in an innocent way, in the sense of you know, there's suggestions of it certainly in all the disciplines, but I'm curious in Prince Hall if there's an emphasis or if it's de-emphasized and more about the rituals.
Well, I can't speak for all lodges, but I know in my lodge there isn't another formal book like Pike or Wilmshurst, although as Master Masons we may have a large study on those, but as a candidate, You are handed out some printouts to study, which would give you additional information. And the questioning period that you go through, which is arduous and large, those people that ask the questions know that you don't have the answers to some of the questions. But when you come back the next week, they ask you the same darn question all over again. And the idea here is that it's a verbal mouth-to-mouth learning experience whereby knowledge is imparted, questions are asked and re-asked and re-asked until the point that the candidate can verbally give back the information that he's learned in lodge. And you might have a candidate for 4 to 6 hours of questioning before he can go on to his next degree.
Wow. That's kind of refreshing. I think that sounds great. You know, that would be great to see, and not to see somebody on a hot seat squirming, but just to really reinforce that education and knowledge. I think that's a great thing. One of our observing. Go ahead, Dean.
Let me just pipe in here for a second, Fred. Let me ask you: after someone goes through all that work, how quick are they likely to leave the lodge shortly thereafter? Is there a lot of turnover early on, or after doing so much work, you think that they? I'm kind of leading the question a little bit here, but do you think that they value it more and thus put more back into the lodge later on?
Well, to differentiate from my experience in mainstream masonry, where you can go through pretty quickly and the turnover happens after you become a master mason and maybe been in a lodge a few months and all of a sudden, you know, you don't see the brother anymore. In Prince Hall, the turnover is done before you made a master mason, because they're not going to let you become a master mason and go through all that unless you're willing to subject yourself to that. And those people that really aren't interested in that kind of thing will drop out right after the end of the apprentice degree. You won't see them again. So the dropout is before, not after, because you are being made. You know, it's almost like you're in the army, you know, and it's boot camp. And you are, you have a drill sergeant that comes to lodge, and you come in and, you know, when the candidates come in, they say, they come up to they're required to come up to the altar and give the sign of the degree that they're on, and then they are required to say, "Good evening, worshipful master, senior warden, junior warden, and brethren," and they're required to address us. And it's almost like a, you know, almost think I'm in the army for a minute here. And then, you know, those questions come, boom, 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 and it's like drill sergeant time.
And yeah, I was actually.
Some people just don't.
I was going to add that
some people don't.
Some of what I've heard about Prince Hall is that it's a very not in a bad way, but a militaristic sense of organization and conduction that it is done with that sort of precision of the level step and of the addressing of all those that are in seats and positions above you. It sounds phenomenal. I can only imagine what its working looks like in a lodge and how it's conducted. Something that I wanted to add, and perhaps, but you can comment on it. But with one of our guests, in giving us some sideline comments here, back to the topic of the degrees and the education, that he stated that they do go beyond Masonic authors, but with an understanding that Freemasonry is an amalgam of philosophies and sciences, so that it's really truly Freemasonry in its truest sense of taking in all these different paths of knowledge. Even the fact of disagreeing with some of the patriarchs of Freemasonry and really trying to dig into, you know, what we're being told by our past. So I think that sounds very interesting. I would be very curious to read these things. I'm sure there's tremendous work that's being done in these lodges, and it sounds every bit regular to me.
It's very regular, but it's intense. It's Masonry intense, and I agree with what was said. And agree with what you just said. I probably didn't express that well, but Prince Hall, especially in the learning phrase, is intense, very intense.
That's great. And I'm curious, you know, with just in the same vein of topic, what is the fraternity like with it? The camaraderie between the individuals, is there a having undergone it? Obviously, there's a degree of any fraternity of a mutualism of activity, but do you think that there's a strong sense of bond between all the men that have gone through it?
Absolutely. It's probably the stronger set of bond than I've seen elsewhere. And let me say, I go to lodge every meeting and start off and greet every brother with a hug. And every brother hugs every other brother. And when we leave, we all hug each other. And that's seems to be the Prince Hall way, but it's very close bond, really, very close.
That's great. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I was going to ask Fred as well, another issue hitting the Blue Lodge, for instance, would be the membership declining and the lodges closing. And struggling with those issues with Blue Lodge, is the same thing happening with Prince Hall Lodge, or are they just remaining constant? Are they growing? Are they on decline? What's the trend happening there in that body?
Well, my sense is from what I've seen is that they're struggling also, mm-hmm. but those that are there. Turn out in larger numbers and are more, no, I don't say more dedicated, but I just see that the people that are there are very into it, but there's not enough of them.
Okay. Go ahead, Greg.
Interesting. It's interesting that you should pick that as a question there, Dina. You know, the question that I was going to lead out with next is the common and uncommon ground between the groups. Obviously, as I said earlier, that Prince Hall is a parallel line of Freemasonry that runs concurrent in the United States. And without going into necessarily any of the issues of recognition or not specifically, I mean, I don't want to turn this into sort of a bash as to who recognizes and who doesn't. But it seems to me that there's a tremendous amount of common ground between the two groups, that there is very little that differs between them. And with that in mind, from the opposite end of things, I'm curious why there are some Prince Hall organizations that have decided to not choose to be recognized by the quote-unquote regular Freemasonry of America. And it might be a little bit of a question on the year, and you know, it may not necessarily pertain to your jurisdictions, but I know it's come up in different conversations, and if memory serves me well, Fred, in Texas, wasn't there a question as to that at some point, that there would be a recognition from Texas and of the regular bodies and the Prince Hall bodies opted against, or am I confusing my states?
Yeah, I think confusing your states, although the recognition here in Texas is really quite a sham, because the Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Texas decreed that there was to be no Masonic socializing, no Masonic discourse, and no cross-visitation. So it's a recognition, but it there's no intermingling allowed.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You know, and I wonder what the argument is behind it for why there's a distinct gulf between the two, when the two seem to have such similarities. You know, the interests are there in the education, the interests are there in the fraternity with the brothers. The interest is there in making good men better. I mean, that's the credo that we all live by. You know, it seems confusing to me why necessarily, and from the regular side of it, why there's still necessarily issues of recognition. You know, on a national scale. I know most states in America now universally recognize Prince Hall. Now, there still might be issues of, you know, jurisdictional visitation, which seems more of an administrative issue and something that certainly could be worked through. I know if I wanted to visit a Prince Hall lodge, I could probably do so fairly easily with a letter to the Grand Secretary through my secretary at lodge and get that worked out. You know, but it confounds me as to why there's still a separation like that.
Anybody have any thoughts to that? Greg, I just wanted to bring up recently I had a fellow join our lodge, affiliate with our lodge, coming up from Florida. And he said that there's, you know, he was mentioning about Prince Hall not being recognized in Florida. And I investigated a bit further, and apparently there are some, as well, some irregular Prince Hall lodges as well. So there are other issues involved there that, you know, not all Prince Hall lodges are equal. Grand Lodge jurisdictions operate under the same premise either. Some of them are running amok, I guess you could say, of the standards that are set by most other Prince Hall lodges. So,
right. Right, you know, and actually one of our guests that are watching, I just wanted to make their point that they said that many don't care. This is coming from the Prince Hall and back to the regular Freemasonry, and I'm wondering if there's that sense of apathy that's really prohibiting an open dialogue about it. I mean, if, you know, after so long it's not a big deal and it's, you know, nobody cares, you know, at what point do people really stop caring about it?
Fred?
Perhaps. Yeah. I'd like to make one thing clear, is that Prince Hall has clandestine offshoots, just like regular mainstream masonry has. But the Prince Hall lodges within each state pretty much operate the same way. And Florida has had a breakthrough recently, I believe. Recognition is coming there.
Excellent.
That's interesting. And not knowing, not being in Florida, certainly it's not a topic that I would be able to answer. But perhaps a future guest may have some more information about it that certainly they could bring to the table and we could talk about. That would be very interesting. Any final thoughts, gentlemen? Anybody have anything that they'd like to bring to the table with this topic of Prince Hall Freemasonry, anything that we've missed or any other areas that we might want to cover from our guests that are watching in the wings?
I'd just like to say that from the few Prince Hall Masons that I deal with, some of them I consider some of the closest brethren that I know. So, you know, even though I know most of them only through chat and online and blogging, but they're exceptional brethren from the few that I've had contact with. And, you know, I'd encourage to continue this dialogue between the two groups and make it, and gradually perhaps in some of the resisting areas we'll eventually there will be no longer a resistance, maybe in the long term. I don't see that in the short term, but in the long term maybe we'll see a recognition across all of North America. But anyway, I'll hold my breath for now. But if anyone else wants anything else to say, go right ahead.
Well, again, to be nice about it, I don't think that all people are comfortable with the intermingling of the races. But I think in any avenue where there are differences, it behooves us to sit down and socialize with each other outside of Tao Lodge. There's many things that we could do, and if we have a common social event or dinner together, break bread together,
mm-hmm.
at a neutral point somewhere, we would not be violating any of the obligations of our Grand Lodges, yet we would get a chance to know each other. And once you break bread together with somebody and you just sit down and talk to them, I think you can dispel a lot of these myths and problems. And, you know,
absolutely, some of the misconceptions. Absolutely,
we're all human beings.
Fred, just out of a point, are you still a member of your lodge in New England as well?
No.
Okay,
not.
So you only have membership now in Prince Hall.
Right.
Okay. I'm just curious.
So there's something interesting I want to add that's a little tangential to it, but just recently I watched something on the Dalai Lama from Tibet, and he in the film that I saw, he was talking about the conflict in Palestine and Israel, and he's talking about how all these disparate factions at some point can get together. And even to begin to talk about their differences, just how they start to get together. And it really, his simple answer was, have more picnics. Do more together so you get to know each other, and the differences will evaporate away. I mean, it was the simplicity of the wisdom. And sure, it's difficult, but the simplicity of the wisdom was profound. You know, it's just a matter of time. You know, if you see differences and boogeymen, then that's all you're going to see until you actually go out there and you find the common ground and you break bread. I think that's really and probably the most simple way of seeing beyond themselves. I don't know. That's just my two cents.
No, I think you raised a good
power.
Point there, Greg.
It certainly
Sorry,
is a power to breaking bread.
Yep. Yep. And certainly I would invite any of you brothers out there, Prince Hall, to let's have a picnic. I can make a mean steak on the grill. Let's sit in and talk about it.
Because yeah, the bread's getting kind of expensive these days, so we'll have to find a substitute for bread, perhaps some beer.
Absolutely.
Oh, that has wheat in it, barley in it too, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Find something else.
On the grill?
I know, just in reading just some of the comments from those in the gallery here, absolutely, we all are one. I mean, this is one fraternity. We're not doing different stuff. So this is a great thing. Very nice. Well, very nice talking to you, gentlemen. Big thanks to Brother Fred for being our Prince Hall go-to guy today and helping us with all the questions. And those in our web audience that have contributed their comments and questions, I certainly appreciate it. I don't know if you'd rather just remain an audience in general, or if you'd like to be specifically mentioned, please let me know. But definitely thank you for being here. I definitely good for y'all listening, and thank you for listening, contributing to this podcast, and for being a part of our first step in bringing more light to the Masonic world. Moving forward, look for scheduled announcements and future broadcasts, and check iTunes and MasonicCentral.com for special upcoming publications. If you have any questions, comments, or email, send them to MasonicCentral@gmail.com. Dean, do you have any parting shots?
No, I was just waiting for our outro. And those present, please wait to the end of the show, and we'll have a little chat after the show is over to discuss the preceding show.
We'll go for our virtual beer and talk about what we just talked about inside. Very good. Thanks to the listening audience. If you guys liked what you heard, didn't like what you heard, let us know. We're more than interested in hearing what you have to say, and maybe on an upcoming program, we'd be more than happy to have you on, and maybe we can all talk about it together. This is Greg Stewart, Brother Greg Stewart, and this is
Dean Kennedy saying
travel light. You didn't say it with me, Dean.
Oh, did you want me to say it in unison? Do you want to try that one last time? Since this is our first real show, we'll have to practice, okay?
if we have
the bloopers, well, we don't have bloopers. We tape our bloopers live. There's no second takes here.
We can cut it all together. All right, we're going to exit it out. This is Brother Greg Stewart.
And Dean Kennedy.
Saying
travel
light.
Light.
Oh, you got it. All right, thanks, everybody.
Oh, my God.
Talk to you guys all soon.